Welcome to the Spiritual Shit Podcast with your host, Alia Lovely. This is a place where we discuss the spiritual, the mystical, and the magical of the human experience. I will give you personal insights on this podcast and interviews and card readings to help you think about the critical questions we are facing in these complicated times and to shed light on the concerns of the collective. Here, I will take what was woo-woo to the mainstream, so no topic is ever off limits, to have authentic and thought-provoking conversations to help you think about spirituality and how it affects our humanity in a variety of ways. We will laugh, we will cry, and most importantly, we will think about our inherent resilience, transformation, perseverance, and highlight the limitless possibilities that exist within each of us. I want to inspire you to push beyond your own limits of comfort and strive for an open mind, no matter the odds. I hope to encourage you to embrace your potential and pursue your dreams with an element of fun, spirituality, and humanity. Remember to like and subscribe to never miss an episode and review and share so others can be inspired as well. To connect with me personally, go to thelovelyalia.com or join my Patreon at patreon.com/thelovelyalia for behind the scenes extra content for the show and our monthly forum to find like-minded souls to discuss your own spiritual journey. Follow me at Instagram at thelovelyalia as well as YouTube for video podcasts. And thank you so much for joining me on this journey. So let's get into today's episode. Hello there. I'm just going to pop on here real quick to let you know that as a listener, I really appreciate you. And so if you would like to check out any of my services like mediumship, family astrology readings, card readings, and the like, then you can go to thelovelyalia.com/services to book a service and use the code LISTENER for 20% off. They are first come, first serve, and I usually run out of appointments pretty quickly. So take this as your sign to meet with me. I hope I see you soon. And I hope you love this episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spiritual Shit. I'm your host, Alia Lovely. And today we have none other than Jerry Henderson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Ollie?
Good. I'm good. I'm really excited to talk to you today because I went through a lot of your content and we have so much in common when it comes to the message of self-love to the collective and the world that we're looking at right now that seems to be falling from underneath our feet from a lot of trauma, a lot of PTSD, a lot of people who just can't find a way to love themselves. And we're having a really hard time pulling our lives together when these paradigms that we're taught to build upon are now falling down. So we're going to really get into it today. but before we go there, I would love for you to kind of just tell your story and give us some background on how you were just a normal guy who figured out how to pull it together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for letting me be here. Such a gift, such a gift. I'm really thankful for all the work that you do for the collective. And the So yeah, it's an honor. So my story, gosh, you know, I always start with kid who grew up in really bad trauma, bad home situation, sexual abuse, physical abuse. And it was just, you know, grew up in U.S. poverty. I say U.S. poverty because it's a little bit different than some of the third world poverty that people have experienced. And so welfare system, and really got this message that I wasn't important, that my life wasn't important. And it really broke my relationship with myself. I talk a lot about how trauma separates us from ourselves and it breaks our relationship with who we are. And so I lived with a broken relationship and got into drugs and alcohol at a very young age. At the age of 5, my parents would feed me alcohol as like a reward for chores by the time I was 9.
That's wild.
It was wild. And I remember as a little tyke just being fall over drunk at times, you know, at the age of 7 or 8 years old. So by the time I was 9, I was, you know, doing a little bit more experimentation with drugs with other family members. And by the time I was 14, I went to my first experience of rehab. And then at 17, made a decision to try to turn things around because I was getting in so much trouble and having health conditions at that point, and made a decision to become a follower of Christ. And that's where my faith journey began, which, you know, I then, as I tell people, I made God in my image of shame. And so I had this terrible, you know, shameful relationship with Christianity and God that even made things even worse in my life. And was really just trying to figure out how to serve people. And then went through this 18-month period in my late 40s where everything fell apart. I went to 2 stints in rehab, got through a second divorce, then went into the COVID isolation and was really drinking myself to death. I then figured out that I needed to change, and then went on a journey of self-discovery and learned how to heal my own life and learned how to love myself. And that was the genesis of everything changing when I decided that I was worthy of my own love. Yeah.
Damn. Okay. So first of all, I can tell you do podcasts because you know how to like wrap it in really quickly. Sometimes people go for 20 minutes. You did it in that like nice little elevator pitch. I appreciate it. Wow. That's so, oh my gosh, I have like 1,000 questions, but like, wow. Like what a turnstile, like to have gone through all that, like to be at five, to have gone through that and had the people that you're supposed to trust end up putting you down that path. So I guess the first question I have is how do you reconcile the harm that happened to you and not internalizing a lot of that? Because sometimes when we're talking about self-love, people, I come from a Christian background and it was guilt and shame and you should have, and you know, whatever. So as a foundational imprint, I'm always in that space of like, damn it, Aliyah, like you just should have done this. You should have figured this out. You should stop eating. You should work out. You should, you know, whatever. And not and unable to change core behaviors because there's so much self-hate down there. How did you reconcile that?
Well, that took a lot of work, Aliyah. It was really a shedding. It was a stripping down to the core. You know, I was in rehab the second time, and I had this aha moment. Well, actually, it's my third time. At 14, I went into rehab. Then I went into rehab in my late 40s. And then a year later, went into it, you know, again. And that time for a 30-day period. And it was in that 30-day period that I had this aha moment that I realized that what happened to me wasn't me. And that the shame that I experienced was being handed to me, or it had been handed to me as a kid. And it was handed to me in a faith structure that was all about what you just said. You should be doing this. And, you know, even though we think that we'll find the forgiveness in faith and all the things that we're looking for, I tell people I enjoyed Christianity for about 6 months. And then I learned all that I had to do in order to be a good person. And I took you down a rabbit hole of even more shame. And so reconciling that was de-identifying and not spiritual bypassing, not separating in an unhealthy way, but realizing that things happened to me, and those things that happened to me sent me the message that I was something wrong. Like I was the problem. That, you know, we walk around with this feeling, people who've experienced trauma, this feeling that there's something wrong with me. Why can't I just get my shit together? Why can't I be normal? Why can't I this, that, or the other thing? And we get into all the shoulds. Well, you should just act normal, or you should just do this. But I had to really go on a journey, stripping it down, finding out where the sources of that pain came from, and understand that I had to actually honor the trauma that I experienced. I had to realize that my heart needed me to say that what I experienced was significant, it was painful, not minimize it anymore. I had to strip down the sources of shame in my faith, which told me I was born a sinner and that, you know, I was all things. And so all of that was about the de-identification process of taking those messages and those experiences away from me as my authentic highest self, and getting rid of those barriers and unlayering that. And so loving myself, that process of rewiring those core beliefs. And I could talk a little bit about my thinking around how that all stuff, that how all that stuff gets wired in us and how we do that rewiring. But yeah, that was really it. Yeah. So
tell me about that, like the de-identification, because I mean, some of us are so attached to our trauma and we're so attached to what happened to us. Sometimes we feel we're responsible for it. A lot of it, for the shame that comes with that. For instance, I have a narrative for myself that as long as I'm fat or as long as I'm overweight, I'm safe because essay and all that kind of stuff. Like, just the idea that like, when I was growing up in the church, like if you know, I was a blossoming teenager and I was like, oh, you might make someone stumble. Your body is already problematic, you know? And it was like, I don't know what to do with these curves. Like, you know, just like what am I supposed to do? You know, and feeling guilt around, I made my brother stumble. So my body was problematic already. And then now that I'm older and I've gone through a lot of self-awareness and whatnot, that ideal that sticks because of the trauma that has existed there and identifying with that and not being able to change behaviors or stick to a diet plan or whatever the thing is because of that kind of core belief that's there.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? We talk about that trauma is not what happened to you, but what happens in you. And what happens in us is we make decisions. We make decisions about life. Is life fair, unfair? We make decisions about other people. Are they, you know, trustworthy, untrustworthy? But most important decision we make is about ourselves. And we often don't understand that long tail of what trauma has done to us. We just know we're carrying this feeling around, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of that healing process is understanding. Yeah, I have this quote about when we truly understand the impact that trauma has had on us, all of our judgments, self-judgments, our shoulds will be replaced with a deep sense of self-compassion, because it's not just what happened to us in that moment, Leah, it's what that tale is. What often results from the trauma is sometimes worse than the traumatic experience. Because we can develop, all of these coping mechanisms and this way of doing life and adjusting. And like you said, we say that, well, me being overweight keeps me safe. Me feeling like something wrong with me keeps me safe, you know? And so all of these things that we judge ourselves for that we can't get free of is because we don't understand often that they're trying to serve us. And in understanding that they're trying to serve us, we can meet them with an energy of compassion and love, right? So as long as I'm looking at that behavior as something that I hate about myself, that I wish wasn't there, I'm matching it with the same energy that it's meeting me with. So if it's meeting shameful energy and I'm turning right back around and shaming it, I'm caught in this loop. And so I never make any progress. But if I can identify it as, well, that was there to serve me, not serving me anymore the way I'd like it to, but it can't
not the trauma, but the coping mechanism, right?
Oh, mechanism. Okay, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that clarification, because the trauma was never our fault. Even the decision that we make to think it was our fault is a safer decision often. As a child, let's just use childhood trauma. It was a safer decision for me to think there was something wrong with me than to think my dad and my mom had no freaking idea how to take care of me.
Yeah.
Because that decision, and it's not a conscious decision, it's made subconsciously.
It's a scarier thought.
Yeah, it's a scarier thought. I'm in the hands of people who have no clue what to do with me. So maybe there's something wrong with me. Oh, and if there's something wrong with me, I can change. I can stay out of their way. I can talk differently. I can act differently. I can fix me, hopefully. And then that'll keep the abuse away. So that in itself, that there's something wrong with me, is trying to serve me. That message. And so the trauma is never our fault. The survival mechanisms that we begin to employ were never our fault. They were subconscious. And so we're judging ourselves about decisions we didn't even consciously make. We made survival.
Yeah. I always say, like, when we're kids, the coping mechanisms that we came up with, like, pat yourself on the back. You were 9 years old and figured out how to survive.
You did fantastic. 100%.
Good job. But we don't need them anymore.
Don't need them anymore. That's one of the things my therapist worked on me with my drinking was, she said, good for you that you figured out a way to not kill yourself by drinking and soothe me. You know, I tell people I drank in order to tolerate my own presence. And to be able to become, you know, when you're that level of shame, that level of coping, you can't even stand being in your own presence. So drinking was this beautiful escape for me. It was serving me. Until it was wrecking me, until it was winding up in the emergency room from alcohol poisoning while I'm trying to keep this image of a perfect person out there for everybody else. But yeah, so I think those things, when we can see that they're there to help serve us or trying to serve us, we can meet them with compassion. And when you meet them with compassion, they open up to you. And as long as you're judging, closed to you, and you can open them up, you can investigate them, become curious about them instead of shoulds. You become, I could, well, I could change that. And what would that look like? And you can meet it with love. And that's where self-love is such a powerful tool in healing the part of ourselves that we're judging. Yeah.
Okay. So you just said like an hour's worth in a couple minutes, and I have so many things I want to touch on here. You know, the two things that stood out to me the most is the idea of escaping oneself. Yeah. And then the idea that the coping mechanism is serving us in some way or another. And the idea, when you said that, it made me emotional. It was like, oh, feel a tear. The idea of escaping oneself or escaping the discomfort that we're feeling often. And discomfort. I'm doing a whole series on discomfort right now, but like the idea of discomfort and how it helps us expand and whatever, how the spirit interacts with that, whatever. But the idea of that discomfort and that pain that we incur often, I mean, especially in, you know, our generation, I'm not that much younger than you, but like the self-soothing that we have through social media and through, you know, like either alcohol, weed, food, you know, like whatever, sex, like there's so many ways in which we try to escape ourselves. And I'm wondering for those who are listening, like, how do we first recognize how we're trying to escape ourselves? I mean, I understand that that would be serving us, but how do people recognize that first? And then once they recognize that, what do they do with it?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, there's an energy that we feel around certain behaviors, right? Anything that we're doing that then produces a shame or that's trying to disconnect us from ourselves, it's actually, we're being invited into ourselves, right? But we're trying to continue to separate ourselves from ourselves. And we talk about how the way out is in, right? The way out is through. And as long as we keep trying to separate ourselves from ourselves, for instance, you'll kick up a memory about something that was painful in your life or a relationship experience or something you want to judge about yourself. And then you begin to think, well, I want to disconnect from that feeling. And then all of a sudden you get this kind of auto response to go to the fridge or to grab a drink or whatever the distraction is that you're going to use. And what you're doing is you're distancing yourself from your own invitation. I often, how when your brain kicks up that thought or that feeling or that emotion, two things are happening. One is you're trying to bring yourself back to what you feel like is home, which is shame for many people who are trauma survivors. We get addicted to shame. We get addicted to feeling bad about ourselves because we believe that's where we belong.
And so we participate in the behavior that we feel shame about in order to feel the shame?
Absolutely. We get caught in a, And so that knowledge in itself can help us get rid of some of the shame. It can help us receive that invitation because when you start to feel shame, you start to feel bad about yourself and you recognize that, oh, that is a part of me that's very familiar with living there. And I'm not familiar or comfortable living in a place that I feel good about myself. So chemically, even when you study the brain, the emotions, everything that kicks up, when you start to be driven back towards shame, it's your system trying to get you back to what feels safe, what
homeostasis.
Feels comfortable. Yeah, you're seeking that equilibrium, the whole homeostasis, right? Bring me back to what I feel like I'm worthy of. And so when good things start happening, that's why we get into self-sabotaging, all of those behaviors. And so what we're trying to do is recognize that that is a, you know, emotional, biological, an entire set of things that are going on with you in that moment to shame yourself, to bring you back to what you feel comfortable, and then to get you into the loop of trying to escape that. And we all know that when we escape, we even feel worse about it, you know, after we're done. And so we keep that loop going. And so recognizing that about yourself. I mean, I am, if there's one thing I'm about, it's about meeting yourself with kindness and gentleness. Be gentle with the parts of yourself that you're judging because they're simply trying to get you to be aware that there's something that needs to heal. And go into that space with them instead of escaping them. And so the awareness, I think, comes just by choosing to try to be aware. Like, when do I feel to escape? What have been my escape mechanisms? What am I feeling right before I do the behavior? It's the escape. And what was the thought before the feeling, right? It all starts with the thought. And I think about, I've done X, Y, and Z, and now I feel crappy about myself, and I want to feel better, so I'm going to go do this. And so, yeah, it's a big part of just being curious about yourself.
So. That, you know, so, okay, we all have coping mechanisms. We all have habits and patterns and things that we're not proud of or things that we don't want to do anymore. We have ways that we want to change. And I'm just thinking of in my life, my health journey is like top right now. That's what I'm focused on. But it's so interesting because the moment that I get like really fed up and I'm like, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to eat like this, And I get all this ball of energy and motivation to like go towards my goal, which often has come out of, I had an eating disorder for a really long time. Like I had like really fucked up like views of self-image that I absorbed from my mom. My dad used to weigh us when we were little. Like just we like a lot of stuff like that. My uncles used to call me Thunder Thighs. Like I was in gymnast, like there was gymnastics, like there was all kinds of body image stuff. Like we grew up in the 90s, snack wells and like all the whole thing, right? So when I get that gust of energy that I'm like, I'm gonna do better by myself. Like I'm gonna do better. I'm gonna, you know, and it's never ever coming out of a space of love. It's coming out of space of criticism. It's coming out of space of these jeans don't fit, or I need to be prettier, or I need to show up, or I'm going to have this photo shoot or whatever. And I always, and I can see it happening. And like when you said that, it hit me. I see it happening where when that motivation comes up and spikes up, it lasts for like 4 days. And then I find myself eating worse than I would even on a regular normal homeostasis pattern to throw me back out of that. And I can watch myself doing it. It's like, I'm standing there with myself, watching myself eat that, whatever my husband brought into the house, 'cause he's got a sweet tooth, and be like, I know this is not what I want, but I can't stop doing it because of this loathing I feel for myself. And everybody can listen to that example and parallel it to anything else, but watching it happen and me thinking I've been, and I'm almost like a lot of times I think spirit gives me lessons so I can talk about it on here. But I'm watching it happen and going, I know from cycles and cycles and cycles and years of this, that this is not how it works. Like I have to come to a fundamental, I ask myself the question, what would it be like? Would it be okay if this is what I look like for the rest of my life? Mm. Would that be okay? Like, yeah. Nobody's going to die, hopefully. Like, you know, like just like, is that okay? Like, is that okay? And there's something that happens in my soul that just goes like, there's an exhale, there's relief. And it's like, no, I don't want to stay like this. But like just that thought introduces a different perspective, a different pattern. So like, what was it like when you were in that cycle going over and over and over, coming back to that self-loathing to go, this is not my pattern anymore. I have to go about this a different way.
Yeah. Well, first I want to say I'm really sorry for the experiences that you had.
And thank
those
you.
Voices. Yeah. Because those voices become our voice.
Yes.
Right. And then what happens as a result of that is we try to heal the voice of an inner critic, or we try to heal trauma with the voice of trauma.
Right.
And yeah. We try to match ourselves with, that seemed to try to motivate me to do X, Y, Z as a kid. So now I'm going to beat the hell out of myself, hoping that beating the hell out of myself will cause me to change. But now it just turns me
Christianity
into
will do that too. Yeah.
It sure will. Absolutely. And it just simply turns you into your own abuser. Mm-hmm. And so wonder like, okay, I want to make a change. So I need to get my shit together. I need to get, you know, stuff going, but I can't. Okay. I'm going to motivate. I'm going to do it. And all of a sudden it's almost like I talk to people. It's almost like you got this elastic string.
Yeah.
It's just pulling you back, the backward momentum. Man, it's huge. And you can almost feel it physically, this resistance. I'm going to make a change and okay, I'm going to do it this time. And then we just slowly feel that pull. And I think a lot of it is because we're meeting it with the energy of a trauma response or trauma energy. And we're trying to heal trauma with trauma energy towards ourselves. But I love what you said when you said, well, would it be okay if it's that change of language that just, you could feel it in your system from like, I should do this, but well, what about if, would it be okay if I did this instead, or could I do this instead? And so I think for me, it was that part of understanding that I was addicted to shame. I was addicted to certain feelings about myself. And the aha moments came for me when I decided I didn't want to continue to match that energy with myself. And I wanted to try a different approach. I tried changing for everybody else. I was trying to make other people happy. And, you know, and then it was when I decided I wanted to change, that I was worthy of love, and that I wanted to do that for me. And then I decided to experiment with letting go of the should energy and I felt like were bad about me, and do what you said, fully embrace them about me and learn to love them. You see, that's what, for me, self-love. I think sometimes we confuse it with, you know, narcissism or pride or other things. Self-love is a very brave and courageous work that we do to go into the parts of ourselves that we have rejected for so many years and love them in such a way that they feel okay to be seen, and they feel okay to be loved, and they can begin to heal, because they're going to stay in hiding as long as we're judging them, and we're going to keep telling them to get their crap together, these parts of us. But self-love is loving all the parts of us in a way that they can begin to be seen and to be healed.
That's beautiful. Because I mean, my whole thing now is like how to trust yourself, right? Yeah. Like, what does it look like to trust yourself? And if you don't love yourself, you really don't trust yourself, right? And then I do, you know, some coaching and stuff. And there are clients that I have that have these kind of repeated behaviors. I particularly see a lot of clients, because I work with a lot of women who are in bad relationships that they can't get out of, or continue to pursue the same type of person, or like find themselves in the cycle. And those of us who are outside are like, hey, leave this, like, you know, like get out of that or whatever. But I myself had a really toxic relationship that I was part of, narcissistic abuse and whatever, with a covert narcissist, and not being able to leave, like being in this like cycle of misery that, like, in a way it was like you get these little breadcrumbs that are like, maybe things will get better, maybe whatever. But because I didn't believe that I deserved any better, I stayed. And I remember the phrase that I would use, which, you know, felt very like from my background, is that I made my bed.
Yeah.
I made this choice. This is my fault. Like, so now I have to deal with the punishment of making a bad choice, and I have to stay in it because I'm not a quitter. Like, that's what I kept hearing from the peanut gallery. Like, you shouldn't quit. You should keep trying. Don't quit. Don't give up. I remember there being, do you remember that really trendy, I don't remember what it just said. It's called Don't Give Up, basically. And it was from a Christian movement or whatever. And it's like, don't give up. And there are so many people who are in these abusive relationships, terrible relationships, that are holding on to something because of the guilt or the shame that they feel in having to make a certain choice that's against what their family want or what they think they should have done or whatever. But anyway, that's the cycle that I was in for a long time. And I watch other people go through that and go, you know, whenever I was finally in a place where I understood and knew that I deserved better, I was ready to leave. But until then, I couldn't get out of that relationship. So how do you help, when you're doing your coaching, how do you help people realize that they're deserving of more? Like, how do you get someone to recognize that they don't love themselves, and how do they start that pattern towards loving themselves?
Yeah. Great question. And I do think it goes back to that origin story. Like, we have to thread back, because we're often just trying to treat symptoms. Mm-hmm. The symptoms are what get our attention, right? For me, it's like, I want to stop drinking because it's destroying my life. Well, drinking was a symptom of something much deeper. And so I was never going to stop drinking if I didn't understand what drinking was helping me deal with and manage, and how it was trying to help soothe pain. And so I needed to heal the source of pain. So, you know, we go through this process where we identify experiences. So we've had these painful life experiences, traumatic or relational or whatever they've been, that, as we talked about, they then cause us to make certain decisions. And then those decisions that we make about ourselves, like, well, this is, must be what I'm worthy of. And how can I be lovable if the people who are supposed to love me don't love me? So I'm unlovable. So I'm going to get into relationships that make me feel unlovable. And then I'm going to create stories as to why I should stay in these relationships, because I'm afraid to get out of this. Because if I do get out of this, then maybe I won't find love with somebody who's healthy, because I'm unlovable, that narrative, right? And we may not be saying it as consciously as I'm right now. It's this undercurrent, right? And so then we identify, you know, we work to identify what are, the symptoms, and then thread back the symptoms to experiences. When did we first hear that voice? When did we first start to believe that? And then when did we start to develop these certain coping mechanisms? And that part of beginning to feel worthy is rewiring a core belief system. And so those decisions then became thinking patterns, right? I'm unworthy of love. That became a thinking pattern, which got so deeply wired in us that it became our personality. It became our temperament, and it became our real core belief of what we believe. Now, the good news is that a core belief can be changed, right? If trauma is something that happened to you, it's not who you are, then that means healing can take place. And so we go through a process of identifying those core beliefs, and those core beliefs are what we do. We have a core belief, then our core beliefs drive all of our behavior. Mm-hmm. And wondering, why can't I change my behavior? Why does my behavior only change for 3 weeks? Well, because your core belief is taking you back home of what you fundamentally feel about yourself. So then we start to identify, what are those parts of you that you need to meet with love? How do we do self-love? What does that look like? For me, and working with people, I find that it is getting that thought. First thing, first place we start is the thought. And I work on this thing called FAST method, which is feelings, actions, our speech, and our thinking all tied together. Because a lot of times we try to do one. Well, I'm just going to think differently. I'm not a bad person. Well, I love myself. And that's the energy we even say it with, like, well, I love myself.
not a lot of enthusiasm.
Exactly. Or we wonder, like, okay, I'm going to go in front of the mirror and tell myself that I love myself. And wow, this feels stupid. This feels awkward. Exactly. It does. Because your body and your system doesn't believe it. Mm. And so what we got to do is get your body and your system to a place where it believes it, which is, we thread back, right? I know this is a long narrative here, but if an experience gave you the message that you're unworthy of love and caused you to make those decisions, how do we give you new experiences? Hmm. And what does new experiences look like? Well, a new experience is looking in the mirror and telling yourself that you love yourself. A new experience is changing the thought that you're a piece of crap to you're beautiful. And yes, it's going to feel uncomfortable. Yes, it's going to feel like a lie. Yes, it's going to feel all of those ways that your system's going to reject it. And that's okay.
Especially with society and how it's like, don't think you're all that. Who do you think you are? Like, yep. the aspect of thinking that that's conceit or any kind of self-confidence is immediately torn down by trolls behind a keyboard on TikTok. It's everywhere.
It is. You know what it is? It's society projecting the way that they feel about themselves onto everybody else. We're just trying to hand our shame out to everybody everywhere, right?
Yep.
I've thought about myself. I feel shameful. So if I can hand you some of my shame, maybe I'll feel a little bit less shameful about myself, right? And so when we realize that, we go, I mean, here's the question. How did self-love ever be, how did it ever not get normalized? I mean,
That's so funny that you said that, because the other day I was meditating and I was thinking about, every time I meditate, somehow I get brought to some childhood memory that's needing some healing. And I remember watching my pastor stand up there and say, "You're nothing but a sinner. You are nothing without Jesus Christ." And, you know, and it's like, oh, at a foundational level, I'm 3, 4, 5 years old. I am nothing without this man, person in the sky who dictates my every move and judgment. And if I don't do everything perfectly, then, well, guess what? You're going to hell. You know, like, yep. It gets ingrained very early. I'm sure from other people's parents and their own projections and narcissism and extension of, you know, like their own view of how they think about themselves, like kind of everywhere. But like the fact that we can't even say, you know, it was really funny. I'm not a big fan of Kanye. I'm not a fan at all of Kanye, actually. The backpack version I was, but like this current Kanye, not so much. But he had this song come out a while back, I Am a God. And I remember listening to the song thinking, like, how dare you? You know, I was still a Christian at the time. Sure. How dare you? This is so blasphemous, you know, whatever. And what's really funny is the other day I don't know what I was doing. I was doing some like background work for my book or whatever. And I was thinking, like, we are all gods, like thinking the power that we have and the love that we have and who we are in the collective, whatever. And that song came to mind and I started laughing because I was like, oh, that was such a foreign concept to me at the time. And now it's something that I live with in my everyday life.
Yeah.
So, right.
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, that self-love's not normalized, and that people built God in their own image. They built a God who was mad at them and felt like they were shameful and sinners and horrible. I love what Dr. Richard Rohr talks about. He says, you know, everybody focuses in on original sin, but, you know, there was the original blessing, which was
Which was good. What?
Which is, it's all good.
Oh,
yes. You are good. And we've lost that narrative, right? And, you know, we've created systems and, you know, structures that keep people oppressed, keep people thinking that they're unworthy of love. Because when we identify that we're worthy of love and we learn to love ourselves, man, we unleash the most healing force that has ever been available to us, which is love. I mean, for those who might be Christians, the thought of, well, no, God wants you to feel bad about yourself or deny yourself. Yeah, remember, I mean, there's the two great commandments that Jesus talked about. And we say that there's the two, right? I just said it, there's the two. There's actually three there, right? So love God, okay? Love others as you love yourself. And so we never talk about the love yourself part. We talk about, yeah, I should love others, or I should love God, we should do all that stuff. But all of that flows out of loving yourself. Because, you know, I can't, scripture even talks about you can't love God if you don't love your neighbor, your brother, right? Who says that they love God and they don't love their neighbor? They're a liar. Well, you know, I mean, we get into all kinds of judgment language around that, but there's the thought that, well, I express that I have love for God by how I love other people. Well, I love other people to the degree that I love myself. Mm-hmm. And so if I don't love myself, nothing flows up, right? So it starts there and it flows up from there. It doesn't flow downward, it flows upward. And so this idea, and even in those core beliefs that we were talking about earlier, got to get to the point where we change that core belief through new experiences, new languages, the way that we feel, and attaching emotion to the way that you feel about yourself. When you say that you love yourself, it's attaching some emotion and letting your brain see that you believe that by doing an action. And so there's a whole way of, you know, making that happen to where you can truly love yourself, and you can love your way out of all of the things that got you bound up instead of judging your way out of those things.
So, yeah. Do you think that the reason why we have such polarity and so much anger and hate in our world today is because there's such a significant lack and drought of self-love?
Absolutely. Actually getting ready to write a whole thing about that, which is we only reproduce what we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we, and that's why self-compassion and self-love is so important, right? You're not going to go out in this world. It's so important just because you need it and it's you're worthy of it, whether anybody else ever benefits of it, just the way you feel about yourself. That's the one and enough reason to do it. But then that energy of who we are is what we replicate. And so mm-hmm. when I'm judging you, it's because I'm judging myself. I'm just mirroring about myself. And so, yeah, I think there's, you know, beautiful. All we need is love, right?
It was like, and it's, you know, to be honest, it's the only reason I brought the podcast back, because I'd stopped out of a burnout that I had. And when things like this happen, I tend to have a knack for feeling shifts in collective energy, and saying like, we need to be able to have these conversations about all the hate that or anger or fear that we're feeling about our brother and what that looks like. What does it look like for us to love others? What does it look like for us to love ourselves in order to be able to love others? Because we can only love others at the capacity in which we're able to love ourselves. And so without that, we find where we look online and everybody's being such a bitch to each other, where it's just like, yo, chill.
I mean, you're just, you know, when people do that, when they're judging other people, it's like, well, I'm just really saying that you're helping me understand that I don't feel good about myself, so I want to try to tear you down so I feel better about myself. And, you know, the greatest gift we can give this world is to learn to love ourselves, and there's just no doubt about it. And I think that, yeah, you bringing back this podcast for that message, for people to hear that, to know that, you know, why we've minimized it, why we decide to feel so bad about ourselves, why we, how we ever made hating ourselves feel more comfortable than loving ourselves.
Right. Like, that just seems so, why is that so second nature now? Like, we grow up, and I think, like, obviously from a generational perspective, we're coming away from that. Even as mom, like, being a millennial parent, the first generation of gentle parenting, like, I think my mom was a pretty gentle parent. My dad, not so much. But with my children, I'm hyper, hyper conscientious of what I'm saying around them, because one, I don't want them to absorb my own projections of myself. But two, not to put my own insecurities or my own fears onto them. It could be as something as small as like my daughter riding a bike. Like, she hasn't learned how to ride a bike yet. But if I'm afraid that she's going to fall, she's going to be afraid, she's going to fall, and that projection following through. But like us teaching our children how to evaluate their emotions, how to have self-awareness, how to take a deep breath and not like lash out in dysregulation. The fact that dysregulation is such a common word that we all use now. It's like, I didn't ever hear jack shit about dysregulation before 5 years ago.
Drop some dirt on and get your ass out there.
Yeah. We know so much about neurodivergence now. We understand, like this morning, my mom sent me a test on sensory processing disorder because my mom has gotten therapy and now has figured out that she's ADHD. And so, you know, the family, they're all doing this work. And I'm like, yeah, ooh, I have sensory processing disorder. Like I fit, I took the test this morning. I think it was like 60 answers and I got 51 like out of the 60. And I was like, okay, I have an issue with this. Like, okay. And understanding why, you know, why I operate the way that I do, why I get angry when I do, why I have certain issues with exercise, like just the feeling of getting hot really bothers me, like some from a sensory level. But anyway, there's a lot of self-hate that goes into that when you don't understand why something's happening to you mentally, emotionally, spiritually, whatever. And so just the amount of understanding that people are gaining about themselves is helping give themselves empathy. Like I'm an astrologer as well. And like, just the fact that I can look at someone's natal chart and say, you came in this way. This is not your fault. You came in this way. Like, this is exactly who you are. Like, there's nothing wrong with you. But people go, you know, they just have that release and relief of that. So what are ways that people can find for themselves to like, what are some maybe actionable tools that they can figure out who they are, like on a base level, so that way they can give themselves more empathy for themselves? Cause we can talk self-awareness all day long, but what does self-awareness mean and how do you find it?
Yeah, that's such a good point, because we kind of get into this conditioning where we think, well, this is good, this is bad, this is the way people are supposed to be, this is the way they're not supposed to be, I don't match that, I feel like I don't fit into this world. I think there's a lot of things that we can do, like working with you on things like the astrology chart, mapping that out and figuring out, well, that's just kind of who I am. I mean, it was such a mind blower for me when I'm a Libra, right? Mm-hmm. October 6th is my birthday. And so, and really unpacking that and looking at that and going, holy crap, that like really matches my behavior. And I judge myself for being so, you know, diplomatic and wishy-washy, trying to make decisions and all this stuff. And I go, wait, no, that's just my wiring. How can I honor that? How can I love that? Personality tests on, you know, the Myers-Briggs.
Myers-Briggs. I loved Myers-Briggs. I was an ENFJ and then switched to an INFJ and...
All right, there you go. See, I'm an ENFP.
Right? An ENFP, okay.
And a very borderline. A lot of times I'll hit I, but you know, I'm just barely over into the E. Mm-hmm. And then that gave me a lot of understanding, because you're this, you know, smaller percent of the population, the INFs, you know, and the IN, you know, all those things, ENFs. And so you start to go, wow, that is interesting and fascinating. So I think curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. We could stop putting ourselves in a bucket of who we should be and the stories that we have. I love the work of Byron Katie about the stories, and we go, well, I should be like this. Who says
why?
Should be like this? Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah.
Do you know that? Where'd that story come from?
Is she so the one that says, is this the truth, or is this the story you're telling yourself?
Yeah. And about how can you drop the story? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got,
I never knew where I got that from. I say it all the time.
Yeah. Stories that we build in our head that were given to us, by culture, people, ourselves, others. And then we go, well, that's the way I should be. And I'm like this, so I'm not okay. You're okay. There's nothing wrong with you. Right. And you just
wait, just say that again. I feel like people really need to just soak that one in.
You're okay.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing about you to fix. You're not a problem to be fixed. You are loved as you are. And if you become curious about who you are, then I think you'll discover, I know you'll discover that you're worthy of love and you're worthy of your own love. And you see, what happens is we layer all these stuff, all these messages, and the work is of returning to ourselves, to our authentic selves, and stop buying into the fact that there's something wrong with you, and one layer at a time, and you just begin to go, oh, I bought that story that I should be like this, and let me get rid of that story, the shedding process, and you get back to like your authentic self, that the part of you that you kind of know was there, but now you're judging yourself about. Mm-hmm. Very, very precious, beautiful, sacred you, mm. and turning to that part. And so, yeah, so I think the curiosity piece, the Myers-Briggs, the other personality tests, anything like that, that can
helps you know yourself.
Helps you know yourself. My therapist is an expert in Myers-Briggs, and she was like, oh, you're this way, you're an ENFP. That's like who you are. Why do you hate that about yourself? Mm. Well, because everybody says I shouldn't be like that, and I shouldn't walk around feeling like this. Why do I feel like the stupidest person in the room all the time? You know? And so finding that out and going, that's what makes you a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff judging yourself for, it's what makes you a gift.
Yeah. So, I love the word curious. Like it's one of my favorites, because the just idea of exploring more. I always joke with people and say I'm a professional question asker, like that. Like I'm just eternally curious, and I used to get in trouble for it a lot when I was younger, because they were like, you don't have faith. Like you're not able to just believe things at face value. You always have to ask questions. And what's really funny, like so funny, is that I have stepchildren that ask a gajillion questions, and I'm often stupid annoyed. Like, why just do, and I thought, wow, it's only annoying to me because it was a trait that I have. It is a trait I have, but a trait when I was a child that was looked down upon, that was like, I was frustrated with, I hated about myself. Like, I remember going to my mom and being like, well, what about the dinosaurs? Like, what, how do they factor in? Like, the dinosaurs are supposed to be 2 million, you know, they taught it this at school. And she's like, you know, go talk to your father about it. And when I talked to my, you know, Sunday school teacher, and then being like, you don't have good faith. Like you ask too many questions, and me feeling shame around my natural curiosity, wanting to understand how things work. Like I probably should have been an engineer. I'd tear things apart and just look at it and like try to figure it out, you know? And I feel that way about people. Like I wouldn't give a shit about anything tech, like, but a person, how do you work? Why do you bump the way you do? Like, why do you do this? Like I'm like that. So then I get children who are like that force me to love an aspect of myself that I've been trained to hate. And the universe is funny like that, right?
is funny.
It's really beautiful. But that curiosity component, I want to switch gears just a little bit into like the curiosity for other people, because I think that the world we're looking at right now has such a difficulty with remaining curious with others who hold values and views different than our own. And instead of being able to ask questions, like, what are they scared of? Like, what was their upbringing? What kind of trauma do they have? Like, maybe they're divergent. Maybe they're blah, blah, blah. You know, like we don't ask those questions, and we look at someone and we say, they're stupid. How can they think that? Da, 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 da. Like they hold this view, red, blue, you know, like whatever the thing is, terrorist or not, like, and everybody wants to immediately come to the most efficient answer possible to do the least amount of work to hold themselves as open as possible. And I find myself so frustrated with this version of the world because not because I don't get judgmental myself, but because I'm working on the aspect and I look at our world and see how quickly everyone is ready to jump to one conclusion or the other. How can we remain curious about people who are different than ourselves?
Yeah. You know, I think the judgment, there's definitely just biological, you know, brain survival. That's like, okay, I'm making fast decisions. You're good. You're bad. You're this, you're that. And it's a way for me to categorize people. But it's just such a terrible way to live life. And it's such a horrible, well, I'm making judgments as I'm saying all of that, right? It's a terrible way for us to treat one another. And we have to get past that layer, right? We have to get past that auto response that I just want to put you in this. And the reason I'm walking around judging the world and categorizing people a lot of times is that self-judgment. And me getting curious about myself allows me to become curious about other people, because I can begin to have empathy with myself when I'm curious and go, oh, that's the origin of my story. Well, that's why I do that behavior. Well, now maybe there's the person across the room, when instead of me just initially judging them, how can I become curious about their story? I wonder what they went through. I wonder what they experienced. And now, not doing that with a, you know, you can get a judgment about trying to not judge somebody, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
You can all this other stuff, make yourself try to feel superior. But I think that place of when I become curious about myself, I understand what happened with me, and then I can become curious about other people, and I can begin to ask questions. I can sit with people that maybe I normally wouldn't sit with. I can begin to have conversations that make me feel uncomfortable to have those kind of conversations. Curiosity isn't always the most comfortable thing,
Oh, no.
because it pushes me up against my belief systems, my boundaries. And I remember it was in my former pastoring days, I would just categorize and judge and label, and you need to pray or you need to do this. Well, it was when I learned that my prayers weren't healing my trauma. Oh, crap, man. You need to do brain work. I'm like, well, I'm a train wreck. And I'm and so I go, well, if my prayers didn't heal my trauma, then how could I walk around and judge other people? And say, and so I had to shed so much, strip down to like nothingness. And 2.5 years as a nomad traveling the world going, what do I think or what do I believe? And it all just came back down to love. And then love will ask me to be curious. Love asks me to explore and to investigate. And so, and it's almost like this dual thing, right? As I become curious, I love, and as I love, I become curious. And
What do you think the greatest aspect of healing are, like, that we're looking at for our current world? And I don't know, let's not do world because that might be too broad, for our country. Where is the area where we need the most healing?
I think we need healing and deep listening. There's listening and we hear things. Then there's deep listening. And can I deeply listen? And what deep listening does is it requires me to shut down this brain that already has a response for your words and already has a narrative as to why your words mean this, this, and that. But if I can stop and I can deeply listen beyond the words that are being said, the layers behind what's being said, that I need, this world needs to hear each other. This country needs to hear each other, and not hear the words, but hear the pain or hear the story or hear the love or hear whatever it is behind those words, and allow that to penetrate our heart, our belief system. So we've got to let our walls down, which is what deep listening does. There's a great quote that talks about, if you want to understand another person's culture or story, listen to their music, right? Connect with their music, their words, the emotion, the things that are going on. With all the divides, with all the judgment, with all the self-hatred that is manifested as hatred towards other people, you know, I can listen to you and hear you. Doesn't mean I always have to agree, but I think a lot of the pain and the hatred and the struggles and the violence are about, you're not hearing me, so let me speak louder, right? Let me do this action to hopefully get your attention to hear. And so could we return to a place of, or maybe for the first time, of deeply listening to each other and honoring what is being said. And
I think, I 100 wholeheartedly agree with you, because when I at least know in that conversation, I have plenty of people on this podcast I do not agree with, and it's almost on purpose because I at least am comfortable with that discomfort, I guess. but the when we're talking to someone who doesn't agree and someone who doesn't hold the same beliefs, I think that we invest so much in our beliefs, like we invest so much in what we think about something, that like it's hard to hear that someone believes something else. And sometimes we're afraid that if they think something else, believe something else or whatever, then our belief or value is at risk. But more importantly, we might hear something that cracks a hole in what we've invested in for a really long time. And I know, as a Christian, but also as a spiritualist, like I had my awakening, I hate the term, but like 20, you know, 16, somewhere around there. And, you know, I had a lot of like psychic stuff starting to happen again. Like I had it all happen a lot in my childhood, but it stopped for a bit. I had a scary experience that like, I was like, I'm not fucking with no more ghosts. Like we're done here. But then when it picked back up, it was like, oh wow, this whole new world is available to me. Right. And then, you know, you start doing the podcast binging, or, you know, you go to sound baths or whatever the thing is. And it's like all this new age stuff. This is fun. I'm doing the tarot cards and whatnot. And I'm adhering to all these beliefs that are the way, seemingly the way shower into this new lifestyle. But then I had another awakening where I was like, wait a minute, this feels like I just replaced one religion with the other one, with a new one. And people are like, I'm a star seed from so-and-so and whatever. I'm like, that's awesome. But you're also here as a human right now. So we got to do this, you know? And the fear that have had that, like, you're about to poke holes in the thing that I've invested all of my time and my energy into. So I don't want to listen. I'm happy here. I'm comfortable here in this little ball. I think that that's what I'm watching over and over, where I constantly ask questions and I'm like, well, you know, like, what if, you know, I'm a real good devil's advocate sometimes, and it's really annoying to a lot of people, but like, what if this was different? What if we don't think this way? What if that's not actually the case? Can we actually entertain the possibility of something different? And when you said earlier that we got so comfortable with the idea of self-hate, and that we're so comfortable with like retaliating with hate, like one wrong deserves another. When we ask the question, what if we don't kill 20,000 people for the transgressions of a few? Like, what if we met this with safety and love and empathy and not force and our dick? Like, what if we showed up in a different way with love? Like, could that change something? And then you get called a centrist, or you get called, you know, all kinds of names. And it's like, no, it's this or this. And I go, why? Why does it have to be that way? Mostly because we're all trying to defend a belief or something that we hold to be true and don't want holes poked in it. So for people who are in that space where we're so devastatingly like terrified of our little belief, our little thing that we sat on the shelf and we've dusted off and we've taken so much time and attention to put towards, how do we get comfortable with allowing it to crack?
Wow. Comfortable with allowing it to crack. I think understanding it's necessary for it to crack if you want to grow, you know, it's the shedding process. Like, it's like, I just want to stay in my skin. I just want to stay in my little zone and I don't want to grow. I don't want to transform. Well, transformation and growth requires the cracking of the shell, right? Expansion that needs a large space to hold you. And so if you're going to be in a space where you're saying, well, I'm afraid for that to happen, we're going to stay stuck. And some people are comfortable with that. I'll stay stuck, I'll do my thing, whatever.
Is it a trauma response?
It can be, right? I think there can be this place of, I know what's safe for me. I built my world. I built what needs to stay safe. And so a lack of certainty does feel unsafe. And so there is a place of, how do I begin to feel safe? How do I feel safe with my paradigm shifting? I know for me, as like I said, you know, getting into meditation was super scary for me. You know, former pastor, you know, all this stuff, Christian, and it's like,
crap, it's demonic.
Yeah, it's demonic. It's horrible. It's going to open yourself up to all kinds of bad things. And I thought, I got enough pain in my life, and the former way wasn't working. What if this could work? And God, it took me like 3 months just to sit there and not feel like something bad's going to happen or this is going to happen. And then I got to a place where all of a sudden, from diving in, learning, listening, that it became the safest place that I could. Because the challenge was, it wasn't that meditation felt unsafe. I felt unsafe with me.
Ooh.
And I was unsafe with my relationship with myself. And so all the thoughts that would get kicked up during meditation, all the discomfort that I was feeling, was about my relationship with myself. And so when we heal our relationship with ourselves, because this relationship is determining every other relationship, right? And so as I heal that relationship, I can then begin to become curious about other people. I don't feel like I need to stay trapped, right? Because we're trapping ourselves out of safety, but we're not realizing that our safety is a prison of non-expansion. So if I can begin to say, you know what, how do I investigate what your belief is and who you are and become curious about you and let go of those other narratives, it really does begin to bring healing in our life.
So. Yeah. It's very fear driven that like I'm uncomfortable with this. I remember when, I think it was like 16 or something, and Rob Bell came out with Love Wins. And like, great book. And I was still very Christian at the time. And I remember them there being like, do you remember, what are they called? Email chains? Nobody does them anymore. Like pass it on, you know, whatever. And then the invention of spam. So I remember our like youth pastors and everybody being like, don't let your children read this book. Don't let, you know, whatever. And one of my friends, Carson, was like, if they say I shouldn't read it, I'm going to read it. So that worked against them, but that's how it got introduced. And later, somewhere in my 20s, I ended up reading the book. And I remember just thinking like, what, you know, like it was a very like destabilizing type of book, learning that Gehenna was not hell, but like the city where they used to throw their trash, and the mention of that, and just breaking down the semantics and the etymology and the connotation and what was happening at the time. And it was an eye opener. It was a huge eye opener. And then starting going to a church that did more of that work, where they were like, let's look at the context. Let's look at this from a Hebrew perspective and whatever. And it ended up working me out of my religion. Like I ended up leaving it completely, but not in like, I mean, yes, I went atheist for like 4 years, but like I came back to God in a completely different way where love prevailed. I remember going back and sending some emails to some people who I was horrible to, like a boyfriend of one of my ex best friends who, she was dating this guy who wasn't equally yoked. And I remember being like, so horrible to him, being like, he's not a Christian, you shouldn't be with him. And how like that was so ingrained, like this idea that you're not supposed to commune with anybody who's different than you. You're not supposed to talk to them. You're not supposed to have conversation. Don't have dinner with them. Like I was so mean to him in that way, like exclusionary. And I remember writing him this extraordinary long email apologizing and saying, I'm so sorry that I was this way. I felt that within this space, I was so blind to like, this is not what Jesus wanted at all. And I'm not a Christian today, but like when I actually go back and look at the text and I'm like, what were we smoking? Like this was not even close to what this text was saying. It was the curiosity that broke me free and gave me my freedom, but it was really scary to embark on that journey.
Yeah, it is super scary, right? Because we've been taught that it's scary. Right? Religion is this, you know, often this control mechanism. And you know, if you look back even in kind of the, you know, the New Testament and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and Jesus and conflict, right? This, and you can look at the Pharisees and the religious leaders from the Jewish perspective at that time as just like jerks and control freaks and whatever and religious pompous. But there was also this place where they were trying to keep Israel safe, right? That, you know, anytime we screw up, God seems to judge us, and so we need to keep people safe and make them follow all these rules, and this Jesus guy's screwing everything up for us, and we're going to get in a lot of because if we don't, we're screwed, and we've been, you know, given the duty to help keep everybody in line. And while that is, yes, all crazy crap and just, you know, toxic horribleness, there is that, and I'm judging the heck out of it, right? that place where there was this, like, fear that they were being driven from. How we ever invented a God that we were supposed to be afraid of? And yeah, there's scriptures that talk about, you know, the fear of the Lord and all this stuff, but not the way that we, you know, are interpreting it. And so religion often puts this fear in place, and then we're so afraid of breaking these rules or not being pleasing to God, and we didn't pray enough, or like you said, we shouldn't hang around this person, and if we do, these bad things are going to happen to us.
We'll lose the love of God.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be rejected by God. We'll be, you know, cast out. But if you take it really to Jesus and his approach to love those who are unlovable. He got judged for hanging out with people that they said he shouldn't be hanging out with. We seem to forget all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And we build this like weird construct of what all that means. I don't know. I think for me, I just had to let go of everything and come back to the simplicity of God is love. And it seemed like everything Jesus did was about love. And then how do I figure out how to love myself? So therefore I can love others, and therefore I can love God in an expression that isn't fear-based, isn't judge-based. And really know that, yeah, you're considered beautiful in God's eyes. And you know, whether a person believes God, universe, whatever that is for you, there's beauty flowing to you, not judgment and hatred. That's my opinion. So
when you say God is love, the what I had a really monumental epiphany for my own philosophy. And I thought, we're not thinking, when we say the term quite literally, God is love, love is God. I'm not saying that this man in the sky is loving. I'm saying that the God force that exists within this earth is love. So when we love others, we are God in and of itself. And at least that's my belief. And when we're able to offer that to other people, we are able to transform, transmute, like change this place for a better place. But what, to come back full circle, love a tie back, is that if we love ourselves, we become God, like in that, in God's image, like we're able to become in God's image. And so, it's important. It's spiritual to love yourself. It is important that we're able to give ourselves that, so that way we can have the capacity to give that to others. Is there anything else you would like to add to that for our listeners?
Hey, I think you're just so right on with that, because it's not, we think God is love, so that means God does loving acts and does loving behavior. It's not what it's like. God is the essence of love. Love is the essence of God. It is the energy. And like you said, it's not this separation. We get into this duality. There's God and there's love, and God does loving things. It is oneness in its complete sense. And so when we want to be as fully aligned with the divine, fully aligned with the universe, it is in loving ourselves. It is giving ourselves the energy of who we are. It's actually realizing who we are. I mean, say you're made in the image of God, right? And so you go, well, if I'm made in the image and the energy of God, and I'm not separate from God in any way, sense, or space, there's no separation. There is absolute oneness. And if that absolute oneness is there, then I am pure love. And so now I am just simply returning to the essence of who I am. And God reproduces what God is. And yes, do we see hatred and violence and all of the things? It's because it's flowing from this place of us being so hateful and mean to ourselves, that I've got to relieve my suffering and make you suffer. And so I 100% agree. My highest alignment, my most authentic self is love. And I need to give to myself, or tap into myself in that love, and release that energy to myself in this form while I'm here on this space in this place. So.
Mic drop. So beautiful. Jerry, thank you so much. It was such an honor to have you on the show. Before we go, can you please tell people where they can find you and what you'd like to promote?
Yeah, you know what? You can find me on Instagram. My handle there is Jerry A. Henderson. You can find me on YouTube. Handle there is Jerry A. Henderson. You can find my website. It's www.jerryhenderson.org. And then the podcast is Permission to Love. And it's on all of the platforms. And so it's a podcast about how do we give ourselves the permission to love ourselves? How do we remove the barriers that we have to allowing ourselves to have that permission? I am coming out with a new book. It's a collection of thoughts and poems about self-love that'll be released in the month of January. And then once again, I do some coaching.
Wait, is it January?
Oh, sorry, February. Coming out.
Oh, February. Okay. All right. So by the time this airs, it will be out.
Let me, should I rephrase that? So,
that's fine.
It's a new book. It'll be out in the month of February. And then I do group coaching as well. I'm going to launch a new group. I got myself.
That's okay.
I'll be launching a new group program, a new cohort starting February the 19th. So yeah, all that stuff you can find out on my website. So
beautiful. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for being on the show. And everybody, if you love this podcast, please send it to someone you love, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, my friend. Such a gift.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to connect with me more, head over to patreon.com/thelovelyalia so we can discuss your views about spirituality in our monthly meetings. If this episode spoke to you, please share it and make sure you tag me. And always, if you're looking for some spiritual guidance, you can always find me at thelovelyalia.com for spiritual advising. Thanks again for listening. I hope you have a beautiful week, and we'll see you next week.